Hello and welcome to the Mystic Mind Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse, and today I'm going to feature the second half of my chat with Jarrett Sanchez. Let's dive right into that. Hope you guys enjoy it, and I'll see you on the other side.
Yeah, and I definitely find that working with the Trivium helps a lot. I should say that you mentioned the Next Step Podcast. It's just a show that I host. I don't put out episodes very often, and there's a lot to it to describe the whole inspiration for continuing to put it out and for what made me start to do it. But basically, let's take the idea that, you know, government is corrupt and society is pretty crazy. What would it be like if, you know, the world just ended? You know, we'd be pretty screwed. Well, okay, well, let's think about what do we need then to just, it's just, I think, wise as a species to always be resilient and always be able to take care of ourselves, as great as technology is. We're a complete slave to it, because without it, without technology and the centralization of power and production, we don't have shit. I don't have clothes. I don't have food, you know, and as long as this building holds up, I have a house. But once that goes down, what do I have? You know, so it's the idea of sort of getting in touch with, you know, the ideas of food production, permaculture, transition towns kind of incorporate all this idea. It's getting people to start learning the old skills that are needed to provide for ourselves. It is a bit of a socialist, Marxist idea, not where I'm coming from, but you can relate it in that, you know, yeah, we should be in control of the production of our basic needs, at least. I love computers and technology. We're talking on Skype right now. You know, I mean, this stuff is great. I'd love it. I've always been fascinated by technology. But I think the basic needs we have should be produced locally by us as much as possible. And so that's kind of where I'm coming from with the Next Step Podcast. But I also incorporate other things that I'm interested in as well, such as inner alchemy, spirituality, you know, the search for the self, all of those things. So you'll hear talks from Joseph Campbell, Manly P. Hall, and others. You know, it's not just the permaculture stuff. And then something that I'm getting into more is education. And this goes back to the idea of how do we take care of ourselves? You know, what if government schools are gone, or you know, how did people used to do it? You know, there's a question I like asking. How did people used to educate themselves? How did people used to do this, that, and the other thing? And just about the time that I just got fed up with how cloudy my mind was and just how just horribly it was functioning because of just so many bad habits over the years and various bouts of depression and drugs and drinking and all these other things, just my mind was just a mess. And I'd go and listen to like the Sea Realm podcast. I know you're a fan of KMO and his work.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and listening to KMO talk was one of my inspirations to really get my mind together, because he can speak very well.
Yeah.
You know, he has a degree in philosophy, and he spent a lot of time doing the hard work with the mind and studying and this and that. And it shows. It really shows. He can listen to somebody talk for 5 minutes, and then he can turn around and in 30 seconds paraphrase what that person just said, like just so succinctly and so well, and then turn around and transition that into a really deep question. And you're just like, damn, dude, how did you do that? You know?
He's very good at that.
Yeah, he's so good at that. And it's maybe for some people, they just have that native talent that they can do that. But for most of us, we have to actually apply a method and a technique. And usually you get to that when you start to study in the higher education of college, you know, and more especially if you go into the philosophy major area, you know, the humanities and such. That's where you really start to learn how to use your mind. And so you're talking about Jan Ervin, Gnostic Media, the Trivium, Tragedy and Hope, all those guys. That came out right at about the same time where I pretty much had just said, enough is enough. I need to start cracking down and just getting my mind in order. It was like, then the very next, like 3 days later, it was like, well, here's the Trivium. I was like, holy shit, that's cool. And Jan and I actually used to chat on Skype all the time, just, you know, shooting the shit, talking about like conspiracy stuff. And I really don't chat with them much nowadays, just because our life schedules have changed and stuff. And, you know, but for a while there, we were just chatting. And then he's like, I got something coming out you're going to like. And then from there, it was just like this whole new thing. The Trivium interviews that he did didn't explain everything. And it shows that Jan wasn't very well familiar with the stuff at that time, like he is now. But, you know, for me, there was enough there that resonated with me. And I realized, this is something I need to explore if I'm going to learn how to use my mind. This is the way to do it. you know, this is the something that I've been looking for. The elites keep this out of the school system, this, that, and the other thing. I really resonated with that because I felt that in some way it was true. And so I just started digging. I started learning about the liberal arts. And I don't really think many people, if they were to just start researching the liberal arts, would get much out of it. They would find it kind of boring and be like, well, yeah, this is how they used to do it. And look at some of the assholes that were produced of this type of education. These are the kind of people that are, you know, planning society now. And it is true in a way. But basically, I've discovered that it is really just a method. It's a technique. It's something you can rely upon to uplift your mind. You know, to really learn how to start making sense of things, of material, of information, how to process stuff. And it does have effects, I think, in spiritual practice because, well, just simply because by working with the trivium, you're learning how to organize your thoughts a little bit more. And then also you're starting to learn how to concentrate, because to sit down and read Aristotle and to take notes and to understand what he's saying, at least in some way, you have to have mental concentration. You have to be able to sit at least for, a half an hour and keep bringing your mind back to the words in front of you. You know, you can't have the TV going. You can't, you know, be listening to music or this and that and the other thing. It really helps with mental concentration, and I think that bleeds over into any spiritual practice that you're going to do. It centers you. And Rudolf Steiner would say it's helping to create actual spiritual organs.
Yeah, I love that. It seems like a metaphor to me, but it seems like at times he means that kind of literally.
He means it literally. But if you were to try and understand it literally, you'll get nowhere. So I think it's best to just understand it metaphorically until you can catch any glimpse of what he means literally. And it really is just such, I can't say I fully understand it, but just by becoming more and more familiar with the material and trying to understand what he's saying, I've got glimpses. You know, I can see more of what he means. And so it is tough to, when he talks about spiritual organs, to think of it literally, because we're going to think of physical. We're going to think of an actual physical organ when that's not what he means.
Right.
It's like a chakra. Think of a chakra. That's not an actual physical thing. It relates to parts of your physical body, but essentially it's an energetic reality. You know, it's so much more fine and subtle than the physical body that there's just no real comparison. You can only draw analogies and things like that by saying, well, it's like an organ, but it's not an organ, you know? So basically when Steiner talks about growing spiritual organs, you could think of it as developing newer chakras, I guess you could say. So, and this comes back into this mental concentration with the trivium. Is there anything you want, like, do you want me to kind of like break it down or?
Yeah. In fact, I was watching some of Jan's interview with, Alex Jones today, and it's
I was really surprised by that.
Yeah, I think it's cool that, I mean, that shows there are miracles happening, because I think Jan's work is important. And yeah, I would love it if you could break down the trivium real quick. I just wanted to put one idea in there, which is that,
sure,
from what I understand, like, the trivium provides a means by which to arrive at the greatest amount of certainty that one can discern, and it seems like a method to think independently of feeling and willing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So it puts you directly in touch with the world of thinking and ideas and language. Really, that's what the trivium is doing. It's teaching you how to work with language, the symbols of language, and which is ideas. You know, we can have ideas, but until we can put them into a symbol, how do we tell that to somebody else? You know, and how do we get our message across? There is feeling involved and will in all of this, but essentially the trivium is training your mind. It's training your life of thought in a way. But it's training you to think about the things that are outside of you that might be playing upon your feeling, that might be playing upon what you're doing. You know, Jan is very big on working with logical fallacies and stuff to spot the lie. Spot the lie that's all around you. Politicians are using these fallacies against you all the time. You know, so
you have emotional responses to those fallacies instead of being able to see them clearly through a relationship with the fallacies. That's my experience.
Yeah, yeah, it's like Kung Fu training. It's you start at the bottom, you just work with stuff, and you start to develop some moves, which is understanding, and then you know you can go out and defend yourself. And here's how I, based upon my own research and study of the Trivium, this is the way I'm starting to present it now. And I'm actually working on a full-blown presentation that I'm going to put out on the podcast and maybe make a YouTube video and stuff. Sweet. And so here's my way of talking about and introducing what the Trivium is for people in the 21st century. There's three different ways of understanding the Trivium. There's the subjects, the actual subjects. There's, in this order always, grammar, logic, and rhetoric. In grammar, you're studying the building blocks of language. In logic, you're putting language together and you're understanding thought and how thought works and doesn't work. You're making sense of things. You're getting rid of contradictions. You know, you're trying to figure out what is. You're identifying something. What is this that we're talking about here? And so that's logic. And then in rhetoric, you're learning how to put these thoughts together using language and to put it back out there for some purpose. Maybe you want to persuade somebody to do something, or you want to inform someone, you know, or whatever it is. So you have the three subjects of the Trivium: grammar, logic, and rhetoric. And it's just helpful to always remember it in that order, because that is how you have to learn it. You know, you can't just start trying to persuade an audience that it should follow you if you don't know how to speak their language. You know,
right.
And if you can't make sense of the language, you might learn some of the words, but if you don't know how to put those words together, you're not going to get anywhere with them. So always think grammar, logic, and rhetoric. And those are the basic subjects of the Trivium. Now, there's something that Jan and Gene and other people are bringing to the table. It's what I call the Trivium method. Okay, the Trivium method is now looking at grammar, logic, and rhetoric as metaphors. And a really easy analogy is how a computer works with information. It takes information in, you have the input, there's your grammar. It processes the information, it makes sense of it, puts the ones and zeros where they need to go. And that's your logic. And then it outputs that information. It displays something on your screen or it prints something. It takes that information that it's processed and it puts it out now. And that's the rhetoric. And so with that, you have a method for approaching any information and any subject. Now, you want to learn how to cook food. You want to learn how to cook, let's say, Japanese cuisine, or you want to learn astrophysics. Two different things, you would think. Like the skill involved with one is completely different from the other. I mean, one is really hard. You know, learning astrophysics is really hard. Japanese cuisine maybe for some is pretty tough, but it's not astrophysics. But when you have the Trivium method as part of your normal life of thought, both of these subjects become on even ground as far as approachability, as far as they're both within your reach. Astrophysics is no more, you know, something that's for the ivory tower people. It's just going to take longer for you to get through the grammar and the logic stage of astrophysics than it's going to for the Japanese cuisine.
Right, the lexicon, the language is more to take on.
Yeah, there's more information in one than the other. There's higher concepts in one where you don't find that in Japanese cuisine. But the basic method, the approach to both subjects, both kinds of information, is the same. You have to get familiar first. That's what grammar stage learning is all about, is becoming familiar with the territory. What are the words? What are the basic types of food we're going to do in Japanese cuisine? What are the basic terms and ideas found in astrophysics? And from there, you build upon that. You start to learn about a recipe. Okay, this is how you make this type of sushi. This is how you understand this function of you know, astrophysics. I know nothing about astrophysics. I wish I could give an example.
We should call him Brian May.
Yeah, that, you know, I'm going to call him later.
It's funny, we're like, friends on Facebook. He's probably not the real Brian May, but please continue.
Yeah. so that's the logic stage of the Trivium method. Is making sense of this stuff. You have to start with the basics, the grammar. You got to know what you're working with. You have to see sort of the general picture. When you're reading a book, the grammar stage learning of a book is look at the outside of it, you know, read some of the blurbs, check out the table of contents, read through the book, but don't get hung up on it if you don't understand something. Just get through it and get a general sense of what this author is doing with the book, you know. That's the grammar stage of the Trivium method. Just be familiarization. That's what I always say, familiarity with what you're learning. Then in the logic stage, you're starting to understand it. You're trying to make sense of it. you know, and you'll spend a lot of time in the logic stage when you're learning astrophysics. You're going to spend a lot of time, maybe your whole life. You'll never get to the rhetoric stage, maybe, but that's how you learn it, though, is by working through the logic phase of the trivia method. In Japanese cuisine, it's, you know, taking the ingredients and putting them together in a recipe. And then the rhetoric stage is where you can understand something well enough, you can start to put it in your own terms and to repeat the information, to teach somebody else, you know, to field the questions they might have, and or to just find new ways of introducing the subject. Like what I'm doing here with the trivium is my way of coming to an understanding of it and then putting it back into a presentation that I think is helpful, you know. And so that's why I've developed this idea of the trivium subjects, trivium method, and trivium skills. So what I'm doing right now is a bit of the rhetoric portion of the trivium method, you see.
Right, which probably gives you a better understanding of the logic by explaining it to us.
Yeah, by working on your rhetoric, it forces you to really work at your understanding, because you could start off and say, oh, this is what the trivium is, but then when you go back over your notes and realize, oh, I forgot this idea. Well, actually, now that I've learned this, this other part doesn't make sense. So I kind of have to work on that. And that's a really hard part, is working on your rhetoric. How do you present something? You know, who is your audience and this and that? I mean, there's all these things to consider. But basically, essentially, the trivium method allows you to approach any subject, any piece of information in the same methodical way. So that's why Japanese cuisine and astrophysics can be equally accessible to you. Although one requires more work than the other, you'll never get lost, because you always know if you're lost, go back to the grammar stage. You just haven't become familiar enough with the grammar, and then again approach the logic stage. You don't understand something, well, define your terms. What is going on here? What has got you hung up? Figure it out. You know, that's all that logical stuff, is finding the contradictions and eliminating them. Identifying things. What is? What isn't? Something can't be and not be at the same time. Or did I say that right? My grammar is the best.
That's where I struggle with the trivium is, you know, I get kind of hung up in philosophy, and it seems like there are paradoxical truths in the universe, and I find myself often like criticizing the scientific method, because if, you know, with the observer effect and kind of the whole philosopher scientist spiel that I spouted last podcast, even if the tools are pure, the observer gathering the data seems to be coloring their experience with their own, I don't know, subconsciously held beliefs and biases. And so I don't think it's wise to throw out the trivium just because we're, you know, we hold preferences and we're, in fact, it seems like a means by which to train a more objective gathering of analysis of data. It just seems to me at the end of gathering grammar and logic and then proceeding to rhetoric, that any belief is really just a choice to believe something in the end. And I'm not saying this to discount the trivium, because I don't know the trivium method well enough to really attest to its value. It seems like something I need to learn at this point to provide a means by which to think, like I said, independently of feeling and willing. But as a means for arriving at certainty, because we are in bodies, and for the sake of discussion, you know, we want to eliminate contradictions from our logical world experience. And while some of these ideas and truths seem paradoxical, at the end of the day, you are you and I mean, we're living, and we're trying to be the best people we can be, or, you know, at least you and I think are, and learn and grow. And so even, I don't know, for me, I find I have trouble turning to any system as sort of the end-all, be-all, but this seems to be one major place where I'm
conflicted,
kind of lacking the skill and haven't really put in the time to develop critical thinking skills. And I think the fallacies, learning the fallacies, is kind of a fun way to sort of slip your foot in the door and begin to stand back from one's emotional responses to language and just learn how to develop a more structured, sort of systematic method for analyzing stuff.
Yeah, well, and I think the fallacies are good for that. And there's something, Jan hasn't learned too much about rhetoric yet, like the actual subject of it. And there's a lot. There's a lot to all three of those subjects, really. Mm-hmm. But I've probably spent more time learning about rhetoric than they have at this point, but I haven't spent nearly as much time learning about logic as they have, you know. So I don't know many of the fallacies. I mean, I've gone through them all. I just haven't memorized them. So they're subtle. Some of them are pretty subtle, and it really does help to have a grasp of grammar in order to fully understand the use of the fallacies in a conversational setting. But you're right. By learning some of these, I mean, you could just start right away by learning the straw man fallacy, where the person is creating a picture of you, basically. They're creating a story about you that isn't true and then attacking that story. Like, oh, well, I heard Jesse Miller was, you know, shooting aspirin in his ass in some alleyway the other night. Can you believe this kind of behavior? Don't listen to this guy. He was shooting aspirin in his ass. Right. You know, I just created a bullshit story about you and I attacked. That's called the straw man fallacy. And you see that used, and you can immediately in that conversation be like, okay, we can't go any further right now yet until we address this issue, buddy, because what you just did was, you know, create a false story, and you attack, and the audience needs to understand that before we can talk about anything else, this has to be addressed.
Right.
You know, it's a weapon in a way, a conversational weapon, you know, for a little bit of kung fu there in the conversation. It's when somebody's bringing this bullshit your way and you spot it, you call them out on it. And you say, we're not going any further until we resolve this. So you either take that back and unfortunately make an ass of yourself, or conversation over.
Yeah. It's also an appeal to ridicule, I think, which is cool because there some fallacies are sort of interchangeable. And I'd like to learn more of them. I've been watching those pop-up fallacy videos that Jan's been doing. And they're funny. And I think humor and sort of a lightness is a nice way to sort of, drop one's biases and just sort of take on new information, especially because in arguments or conversations, it's really easy to become emotionally involved, and then it compromises one's clear thinking. And so, being able to spot those fallacies, instead of just feeling insulted and then sulking in the corner, you can, like you said, address it and say, well, you know, that you're doing this, and so let's get back to the discussion at hand.
Yeah, pretty much. And so, so that's where, you know, learning the trivium, it just gives you these tools, and the more you learn them, the more you can use them in real life. It just gives you an advantage for critical thinking. And so where I was going with this, though, is in rhetoric, there's a concept called the rhetorical triangle. You know, and again, this is not stuff Jan's covered yet, but, you know, they're going to get to it. And so this also really helps you become detached from the situation in a sense, and sort of gives you a tool for analyzing what's going on here. The rhetorical triangle, basically, you look at a triangle, and on the top point, you could say there's your audience. The lower bottom left, you could say there's your message, the idea you want to give to the audience. And then on the lower right of the triangle, there's you. There's the communicator. And There's different versions of the rhetorical triangle that you'll find out there, but essentially this is what it is. You have your audience, you have the message, and you have the communicator. And then within all this, or around this, however the person draws the triangle, you have the context of the situation. Okay? And I don't have a good example in mind, but let's just say you're walking down the street, or like you're going to like a concert, right? And like you're still outside and you're like headed towards a parking lot area where like people are going in, and like some really hot chick comes up to you and she's got like this new brand of cigarettes she's trying to sell you. And she's like, hey, what's going on? Anybody got a light? You know, oh yeah, here, try this one, you know, try this cigarette. You guys might like this. This is really good. And you could be completely swept off your feet just by the woman's beauty. Maybe she's also very persuasive in her speaking. And the next thing you know, you just bought a carton of you know, this new brand of cigarettes for like $50 because it seemed good at the time. With the rhetorical triangle, you find yourself in this scenario and you're going to say, well, for one, I'm the audience. I'm on the audience point. So you're on guard. You're looking for the message. You're looking at the communicator and analyzing that person. Well, okay, she's using her beauty, for one. I could see that, because why else is she dressed like that at this concert? She doesn't look like any of us other hippies going in there to see Phish. She's pretty hot, you know? She doesn't listen to Phish. Bullshit, you know? All right, it might not be true. She could totally be a fan. But you're thinking, you know, you're looking at her because she's presenting herself in a way that she wants to be believed. She wants to persuade you. Right. If she were some old Haggerty lady, like, hey, you want to try these cigarettes? Yeah, done. The decision made. No, lady, go away. Thank you very much. Right? But no, she's really attractive. She's pushing her breasts in your face. So with the rhetorical triangle, you're thinking about this all in the moment now. You're there, but you're kind of detached. You're saying, well, she's trying to sell me cigarettes. Maybe they're good, but before that, she's trying to use her beauty, for one. Okay? And so you see this in the moment, and it just helps you to realize what is going on in the moment without being swept emotionally or just being fooled with words, even, you know? And so then, again, there's the context, too. You're at a Phish show, and she's wearing, like, a Hooters T-shirt. It's like, well, this kind of doesn't jibe either, you know? Maybe if she was a little more dressed down and more hippie type, she would actually open you up a little bit more. But again, with a rhetorical triangle, you're separating in this experience the message, the communicator, and then you, the audience. And then it works in the reverse. When you're trying to persuade somebody or to tell somebody something, you have your audience, and you have the message you're trying to give them. You have the general context that this is being given in. So from there, you decide how to present it to the audience. What words do you choose? You know, what is the flow of information? If you're trying to teach a bunch of Christians about, you know, the Trivium, you're not going to be like, you know, this is something the Freemasons have been using for centuries, and it's working for them, so check it out. You know, it's like, no, you're not going to do that. You're going to be like, well, look, they've used this in classical Christian education for centuries, all through the Middle Ages. They built cathedrals. These people are really smart. You know, check this stuff out. You know, you're going to go more that route. When you're talking to children and trying to teach them about the birds and the bees, obviously you're going to use the term birds and the bees. You're not going to be like, oh, son, before you even take your pants off, you got to do this. You know, I don't know. Sorry, it's a little vulgar, but.
You know, it seems like the rhetorical triangle is the art of persuasion.
Well, many people consider rhetoric the art of persuasion, and really it is. But, and I guess you could, there's so many philosophical conversations that just branch off from this. Hmm. But I think you could basically get away with saying that most things you do as far as communication are persuasive in some way. Yeah. You know, hey, can you hand me the remote? You want to actually get that person to do something, which is to hand you the remote, you know? Or we're talking to your audience right now. We're trying to persuade them to consider what we're talking about as something that's valuable for them. You know, we could get up here and say, this is ultimate truth, people. Get it.
Get it good.
And
good.
Maybe that'll work, maybe it won't. But in any case, we're trying to tell them something that we think is good for them. We're trying to persuade them to listen to us. So yeah, rhetoric is the art of persuasion, but there's more to it. There's these techniques, you know, you learn about, you know, the rhetorical triangle, and they're, it's not necessarily you trying to persuade somebody. It's you analyzing the situation.
Right, depending on what role you're playing in that situation.
Mm-hmm. So it's like I believe Aristotle defined rhetoric simply as the art of understanding the methods of persuasion well enough to avoid them, basically, to paraphrase.
Yeah, it seems like ultimately, like learning self-defense. I mean, a lot of people are into karate because they want to kick ass, but really it seems like more people who stick with it and are on a pure level with martial arts is,
mm-hmm.
you know, often get into it just for self-defense, for being able to protect oneself, and then it becomes a more zen experience the farther you go down the rabbit hole of martial arts. It becomes less about the fighting, more about the internal struggle. And for me personally, that's where I see this information as having merit, is for myself, even void of arguments and, you know, trying to not fall prey to logical fallacies and stuff, even if I just were by myself, learning how to examine the contents of my mind and my environment and information that I come in contact with more objectively, this seems like something I need to really spend some time learning.
You're absolutely right, though. It is that. I mean, it is, how to spot the lie. And it is about, you know, intellectual self-defense and stuff, but there's more to it. It's just about the ordering of your own mental awareness, you know? If you're on a desert island, you don't have the trivia method, and you got a bunch of books of, like, Plato and other things, you might get somewhere with it. If you have the trivia method, you're going to get so much further, and some would say on that desert island you won't become very lonely. I disagree, but it's just an example. Or just say you don't have any books on that desert island, but you have this way of ordering things and perceiving things. It might keep you from going crazy, you know?
Yeah, I think so.
And succumbing to just complete irrational loneliness and all that stuff, you know, and hanging out with Wilson.
The fact that you just said that, I was going to say that a minute ago. I was looking through a Big Five ad the other day. Now, they're still selling those volleyballs. It's brilliant marketing ploy.
Oh, yeah.
With the face of Wilson on it.
Oh, yeah. And there you go. We could rhetorically analyze that movie and say, well, they're just trying to sell volleyballs. There was their presentation. That's pretty cynical, but, you know.
Yeah, it's you fun. Could also say, you know, they're selling, you know, to value what you have, and the whole idea of penciling in time with your loved ones versus actually. You know, man, this kind of ties it back to the beginning, because to me, the ultimate spiritual path is the domestic path. It, you know, it is chop wood, carry water. And it's easy in a bubble, a philosophical bubble, to sort of prance around and pat oneself on the back for being, you know, so clever. Mm. But being triggered in one's day-to-day life, speaking of myself, and feeling like without the tools to not just react emotionally to things as they come up, just being triggered left and right. Like you said it, man, this is a system by which to order your thoughts. And if nothing else, it's like, it's better than counting to 10 when you're upset. It's more than that. It's taking that to the next level and actually being able to deconstruct your own thinking process. And I think I see the most value in it in pointing out my own fallacies in my own language with myself.
Oh yeah, that's what it's all about, man. That really is. And again, Jan and Richard Grove and all them, they have their message regarding the Trivium. They're presenting it to a certain kind of audience, and I think it's very helpful what they're doing, because we need that out there. I mean, Jan was on Alex Jones. I never thought that would happen, dude.
That's hardcore, man.
Dude, and he even busted him out. He's like, yeah, Alex, and some people would even argue that you use the appeal to fear fallacy too much. I was like, yeah, and Alex didn't say shit. I was like, God damn, that's good. That's the information that needs to be on that damn show, you know. But there's more to it, and these things that the way you're talking about it is also how I see it as well, and it's been so helpful for me. I'm still, you know, my mind is not completely ordered. I'm a beginner here. I consider myself a first year liberal arts student, and. Although I've been studying it and researching in my time off for about a year and a half, almost 2 years, you know, I mean, I'm making progress, but the results are there. It's clear. There's no bullshit about it. You know, this is really a method, and we could say, yes, it came from the Greeks and the Romans, but basically this is human beings learning how to do this stuff. This is human beings developing a way of contending with language and thought, you know, the ability we all have for intellectual pursuit and self-awareness, you know, self-awareness in the moment, not just on a book or in our dreams. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on there that I find helpful, and it just, the Trivium, just the more I incorporate it as just my normal mode, the more it becomes in the background and just part of my, you know, operating system or whatever, the more benefit I get from it, and it, because it's just always there. It's always there. I don't have to think about it much. I can just do it. And that's like with Kung Fu, you know, you start by learning just these basic moves. You're not learning how to fight right away. You might learn some things and you get to spar a little bit, but you're learning about yourself. You're learning where your limits are. How long can you sit here in the horse stance doing it right? Can you do it for 30 seconds? Can you do it for half an hour? You know, because that's where you're working up to, buddy. You know, it's getting you in touch with your own limitations, where your own emotional imbalances and things like that, and you're starting at the bottom, but you're always progressing to something else, and it's not all about fighting. There's just so much more going on, because again, you're not really learning how to fight when you're learning drills in Kung Fu. you're learning how to toughen your body and to quiet your emotions in your mind, to get the hell out of the way so that when you have to use your body, it's there to be used and not be distracted by your emotions and stuff like that. So I don't know, there's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on here, man.
I don't know how much longer you wanted to go. Let me just finish up with my talk about the Trivium, because like I was saying, there's the subjects of the Trivium, and then there's the Trivium method, which we were talking about, and then some people still, it's kind of confusing. So I've talked about Trivium skills, and just real quick, it's just getting in touch with like defining terms. Okay, there's one skill, you just make that a habit. What do you mean when you say happy? You know, this is a great one to use with women, because it's like, well, define that. What do you mean by that?
Okay.
But another skill is like the paraphrase, you know, like we talked about how KMO is so good at that, you know, practice with that. Benjamin Franklin called it one of the greatest tools he had for developing himself. Abraham Lincoln, the same. Just take a piece of information. You could take a sentence or an aphorism and just rephrase it. Put it in your own words. Put it in your own words in one sentence. Put it in your own words in three sentences. You know, work at that. And that helps you to get to the underlying intellectual ideas that are going on when somebody's talking to you. They might not even know exactly what they're saying, but when you listen to what they have to say, make sense of it, and spit it back to them, they're like, yes, that's what I was talking about, you know? Or you might be able to catch somebody's bullshit by doing this too, by paraphrasing and saying, oh, is this what you mean? It's like, well, yeah, but it sounded more better my way when you thought something else by it, you know? So, you know, and there's these skills. And so that's what I'm covering in this presentation that I'm putting out. I don't know what the turnaround time is for your episodes, if my presentation will be done by the time this episode comes out.
When are you thinking your presentation will be up?
The end of June.
Okay. Wait,
and it's July 7th now.
Dunk, dunk, dunk.
Yeah. I was hoping to have it at least halfway finished by now. It's getting there. It's getting there. I just have to, once I get all my parts recorded, then I just go into that manic podcasting editing phase I'm sure you know all about, and where I just, you know, all my free time is devoted to looking at the screen and organizing everything and fine-tuning it.
Your podcast?
What's up? I'm hoping in the next 2 weeks it'll be out, and if anybody wants to check it out, the Next Step podcast, which is thenextstep.podomatic.com. So they can check that out. There's other shows too. My most recent one, as of right now, would be particularly interesting to your audience. The episode title is Shamanic Transitions. And I talked to somebody I met online through the Transition Town Network, and she's into like shamanism and earth healing and spirituality and stuff, and then also permaculture and whatnot. So we got into a lot of cool deep stuff that I know your audience will enjoy with that one. But then there's also other stuff like group work, transformational group work, and co-intelligence, and just a bunch of weird stuff I've discovered that I think is really helpful that doesn't require a lot of money, and you know. It's going back to the idea of how can we take care of ourselves first and then, you know, start to rely on society and whatnot. So, yeah, the Next Step podcast, and look for the Trivium presentation soon. And, yeah, that's it.
Awesome. Yeah, man, this could go on forever. I mean, now I want to talk about transition towns. Let's do another show soon.
That's cool.
Seems like what the Trivium is for thinking. Seems like permaculture and farming and, you know, sort of the sustainability movement and transition towns, that it's, it does for the body what the Trivium does for the mind, at least in my opinion.
And the soul.
Yeah, and the soul, man. It's so healing to get back, you know.
That's what it's all about, really, man. I mean, it's like, yeah, taking care of our needs, but our soul, you know.
Yes.
As a people, as a community, whatever. It's like, you know, I'm not a big, you know, into this idea of the New World Order, this one world government. But at the same time, we are one world, you know, and it's helpful, I think, for now to have these divisions of nations. But at the same time, we need to be really working on this problem of division, and what the hell, you know, what are we doing about that? And that's where permaculture is just so awesome, because just by starting to learn about permaculture, it's not going to show you everything, but it's going to get you in touch with more new ideas. It's going to open you up to a different world of that is out there, you know, people working on this stuff that are getting us in touch with our roots, getting us in touch with a higher vision. You know, it's not going back to land. It's also developing our potential into the future. It's not abandoning technology and everything. It's just saying, hey, we got to take care of ourselves first. We have to be resilient. We don't know what's going to happen. maybe we will get taken over by some other country, or maybe it'll be a big solar flare that will knock everything out, or earthquakes, or fucking Elvis will come back and just start kicking ass. I don't know.
Well, either way, we all die in the end, and to make life meaningful today, and to feel good. We all want to feel good, and it seems that when we connect with the earth and we do things like gardening, and when we use our minds, I mean, these things just help us to live more fulfilling lives. And we're all here, so let's make the best of it, right?
Hell yeah, yeah. And I just think the more we work at this stuff, it's just planting seeds for a future civilization that is going to be that thing we wish we had now. You know, I really do believe that by just working at this stuff and not watching television, not just going along with everything, you know.
But I love shows.
Yeah, I know. Well, at the same time, though, don't completely drop out. We have to work in the world with people as they are and where they are, you know.
Yeah, so. I sometimes feel like I'm gifted with problems so that people can relate to me better.
Yeah, if we get too weird, we're not going to be able to communicate our message.
Yeah, I feel you there.
So, I don't know. It's tough. But yeah, dude, it's a beautiful thing. The more I get into this stuff, the better I do feel about our prospects as a species as compared to what you see on the everyday news. So, I don't know. Get to cracking the books, people, and digging the garden. There's the message.
I dig that, man. I'm going to put that in the show notes. Anything else you want to have me add in the show notes, links, anything like that?
No. No, I mean, that's, you know, I don't really do anything else. I don't even want to put my name behind the next step originally, you know. It was just, let's just get this stuff out there to people. But I figured if I put my name there, then it'll just help me kind of, you know, attract people. At least they'll know who I am. If they say, oh yeah, I heard your interview about this, you know, people that I might want to work with or something. I don't know. It was helpful to have my name there. And also, I didn't want to assume a moniker for that show. I wanted it to be more authentic. And if my guest is talking about, you know, or saying, hey, Sancho, or hey, you know, whatever other moniker I might have come up with, you know, this what I'm saying right now, edit out. I'm letting you know. Yeah, I don't have anything else out there to pimp. I'm really not even interested in pimping shit, but I would like people to listen to the next step just because, you know, relate these ideas. And fucking, if I know people are listening and they're out there and they've got this stuff going on inside of them, that's a good thing. You know, that's a good thing. Whether I know that they're taking the ideas I present to them and running with it, whether I know it or not, it's nice to know. It's nice to get feedback and shit. And I'm sure you know that how that is, man. You know, we fucking podcasters, we don't get emails hardly. You know, it's like a fucking slow trickle. So I don't know what's going on with people out there when they listen to my show, but I know people are listening. So that's what it's really all about. You know, it's just fucking get it out there. And that's my good deed there, you know.
Well,
I guess.
I think it's good that you put your name on it, because if there's one thing I definitely gleaned from Martin Ball's podcast, I don't even listen to podcasts anymore. I'm missing out. And KMO was so thoughtful. He played some Critter Jones on his last Sea Realm, and I have so much catching up to do. I'm definitely going to hop on the next step. But I don't even remember what my point was. Just that I need to get back on the podcast wagon. And no, that just by putting your name on it, bro, like, you're a beautiful person, and you want to reach out and share the contents of your heart and mind and your vision for what it means to live a meaningful life, and you know, attract like-minded people. And I mean, that's what friendship is about. But also, it's nice to be friends with people who don't think exactly like you. And that's what's beautiful about this movement right now. And you can't even label it anymore. It's not New Age. It's not conspiracy. It's not even philosophy. It's the enterprise of being, and here we are, and are we going to make this, you know, are we going to sink or swim, and trying to really rise to the challenge, you know?
Yeah, so, for sure.
I'm glad you're putting yourself out there, man, because it's nice to connect with people. I think it helps people feel less marginalized, disenfranchised, you know? There are people out there into this stuff, and so, you know, it's nice to sort of gather the tribe together.
Yeah, yeah, and it's just, you know, and just spreading seeds and just doing it that way too, you know.
That's right, man.
Just people can know that, yeah, there is somebody else, this guy, you know, that's out there thinking similar things. Because there's so many of us that are trying not to just go along with the flow of society, you know, and we're alone. We're so much alone often because we don't relate to anybody else around us. In my town, I mean, I'm starting to find people, but I just don't have time to get out, pretty much. If I had a lot of time for a social life, I probably would find some pretty damn cool people around here, because I'm starting to see some green shoots. But there's some kid in Kansas listening to your show right now that's like, fuck, thank you, Jesse, for putting this shit out. You know, and as long as it's coming from an authentic place in yourself, man, that's the one rule I have. Don't do it just to do it. Ever.
Yeah, I mean, for a long time, I felt like I was just kind of doing it to hear myself talk, and it got to the point where I was like, you know, I don't really know enough to be leading all these people astray.
Yeah.
So it's nice bringing you on, and sort of, I'm looking to do more of this, you know, just kind of get more dialogues going on, and so please come back to the Mystic Mind, Jared. I really appreciate your time and your beautiful mind and heart, bro.
Yeah, I'll come back, dude. I like the couches, the setting, the lighting, the smell in the air, if you know what I mean, and it's a good time.
It's funny, I didn't even rip this bowl, man. I feel proud of myself.
Next time.
Yeah, I'll probably put this out on Emmett's birthday this Saturday. He's turning 8.
Oh, and, cool. Very cool. Yeah, you got some beautiful kids, man.
Likewise, bro. You know, and I feel blessed. And all the best to you in the trenches. You know, the daily humdrum of domestic life. I mean, that is the training ground for all these things that we're trying to put into play. Like, how loving, how patient can we be?
Oh yeah. And just a funny little aside. My work life. We're just talking about the Trivium, you know, and like, you know, real education and stuff, liberating your mind. I work for this book warehouse, one of the bigger distributors to public school libraries in the country. And every day I'm dealing with thousands upon thousands of books that are going into these schools that are feeding bullshit into kids' mind. And for me to go in there every day and do well is like complete irony. It's like, so yeah, I'm in the fucking trenches, dude. It's the best job in town. I have to do it. You know, I got to fucking have a place for my kids and pay the bills. It's like, yeah, I got to do what I got to do.
It reminds me of a Joseph Campbell quote, you know, are you going to let the machine chew you up and spit you out and relieve you of your humanity, or are you going to use the machine, I'm paraphrasing here, but towards your ends? And I think that's part of, like, Steiner's whole representative of man, you know, the Christ being, you know, suspended between Ahriman and Lucifer.
Yeah.
And, you know, being able to walk in both worlds, but not... sort of
not be crushed by them, because they're both coming at you from either side trying to crush you, you know, and that's really what it's all about.
Well, bro, I really appreciate your time.
Cool, man.
All right, till next time, Jarrett.
All right,
peace and blessings, brother.
You too.
Bye.
All right, that was our chat with Jarrett Sanchez, and well, I just want to apologize for my listening skills at times. I could afford to talk less and listen more, as I suppose many of us could. But yeah, I appreciate all your words of wisdom, bro, and I appreciate your time on the podcast, as I'm sure most of you do. And so, let's see here. I'm going to leave you guys with a tune before we go. See, this is one of my brother's tunes, a little electro track he's been working on. All right, I'll see you guys in a few days. Love and blessings.